You're listening to the Live Free Now podcast, bringing you the news, views, tips, and tools you can use to live a free, prosperous, and healthy life. Find us online at livefreenow.show. And now your host, John Bush. Welcome, welcome to the Live Free Now show, bringing you the news, views, tips, and tools you can use to live a free, prosperous, and healthy life. Today is September 11th, 2020, 19 years after the cataclysmic and catastrophic event that took place on U.S. soil in New York City, where multiple buildings were brought down, my belief, by controlled demolition. And what we're going to be talking about today is some smoking gun evidence, some video evidence, some research papers, some scientific literature that demonstrates that there was an official story that was shared with the American public through the 9/11 Commission report, through the mainstream media, that hijackers, 19 hijackers with box cutters from Al-Qaeda, mainly from Afghanistan, even though they're actually mainly Saudi Arabian citizens, hijacked planes, took them over, flew them into the towers, and then World Trade Center Building 1 and 2 collapsed, apparently due to the heat and the structural damage. A lot of people aren't aware that there was a third building that collapsed that day, World Trade Center Building 7, a 47-story skyscraper that was situated in the World Trade Center complex that collapsed several hours later on that day. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about Building 7 and how it collapsed without having been struck by a plane. We're not even going to get into the Pentagon stuff or Flight 93. There's a huge tome of evidence and research out there on 9/11, and I wanted to narrow it down so I could get this video done within an hour or so, because we could go on and on and on. Now, I have a long history as a 9/11 truther, loud and proud. I wear it as a badge of honor. I woke up to the fact that the official story was total BS back in 2002, actually, which was a totally different scene than it is now. I caught a documentary called 9/11 Road to Tyranny by Alex Jones. He's from Austin. I'm from Austin. And he used to have a cable access television program where he plays documentaries and do a show there. And it was a big eye opener for me to begin to understand how the world really works and learn about the phenomenon of false flag terrorism. So we're really going to break that down. I'm going to share a little bit about how things have changed from then to now, about how early on it was really difficult to talk about this subject matter, especially when people were all ramped up and hyped up and patriotic. And if you questioned anything, like George Bush said, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists. And, you know, a lot of things were different back then, but a lot of things are the same. For example, when it comes to the COVID pandemic, we have this whole conspiracy theory phenomenon that's taking place, whereby the media and the public, rather than examining things that people bring up, alternative narratives, alternative viewpoints, rather than examining them objectively, they're just labeled conspiracy theories and completely thrown out. So there doesn't have to be any critical thinking taking place. Well, that was a phenomenon early on in the 9/11 truth movement that came out, where Popular Mechanics and National Geographic and all these experts and pundits were saying that this is conspiracy theory, and this is actually a disorder, a psychological disorder, to question these types of things. So a lot of that hasn't changed. You know, one thing that's changed, there's a whole lot of censorship going on right now, and a lot of the videos that used to be available on YouTube and easily accessible on the World Wide Web are now a little bit harder to find, but thankfully I was able to dig some stuff up. That brings up an important note. It's always important for you to back stuff up. If you find some hard-hitting truther stuff or conspiracy research, be sure you download it on your hard drive, maybe upload it to the library. We just had this Conscious Resistance YouTube channel pulled down. So I want to take a moment to invite you to subscribe to my podcast. We're live streaming right now on my Facebook page, on the Conscious Resistance Facebook and YouTube channels as well. And I also put this out as an audio podcast if you're into podcasts. So you can go to livefreenow.show, or you could subscribe to the Stitcher or the iTunes or Google Podcasts, all that stuff down there. And I want to invite you to follow along. Sign up for our email newsletter. There's no telling how long these channels will be available today. So we will definitely keep in contact with you no matter what. But if you only get your information from the Conscious Resistance YouTube channel or finding us on Facebook, I strongly encourage you to check out some of these alternative channels. We'll also be taking some of your comments. I'll try to keep an eye on the comment feed here from everyone tuning in. Looks like we have a nice live audience going right now. Uncle Kaczynski says, yo, can you do a tutorial on the Blue Leaks files, please? Sure. I did a Fusion Center story, and in that video, if you want to find it, I talked about how you can access through Torrent the Blue Leaks programs. Look, here's the deal. 9/11 was a huge game changer. It was one of these events that takes place that completely shifts the course of history. And as a result of 9/11, there was a dramatic expansion of the domestic police state and surveillance state in the United States of America. There was a dramatic expansion of the foreign wars of aggression by the U.S. in the Middle East, especially. The United States was trying to create a regional hegemony, a regional dominance over the Middle East so they could project power into Eastern Europe against Russia, China, so they could shore up the land so they can have their oil pipelines and all that good stuff through Afghanistan and everything. They had to take out Iraq because they were talking about backing away from the petrodollar. And so oftentimes governments, in order to carry out their agenda, which they obviously know people don't want, they will utilize deception and manipulation. And one of those tactics is called a false flag attack. It's when you attack your own interests and you blame it on a foreign actor. It comes from like the naval, where you fly a false flag, like another flag on your boat, but it's really your own government, and then you're doing some funny business. There's a long history of false flag attacks in the United States of America. The Gulf of Tonkin is especially well documented. The Gulf of Tonkin, of course, was the boat attack on a ship in the Gulf of Tonkin that LBJ utilized in order to lie the American public into the Vietnam War. So a lot of troublesome stuff. There's a huge history of that. Oklahoma City bombing is another example of a false flag terror attack that is well documented with all sorts of problems. Pearl Harbor. It was known that the Pearl Harbor attack was going to happen. That was a LIHOP, right? There's LIHOP, let it happen on purpose, and MIHOP made it happen on purpose. Well, as we'll discover with the events of 9/11, more than likely they were MIHOP. Made it happen on purpose. And I specifically say that because it's very clear there's a whole body of evidence that leads me to believe that World Trade Center Building 1, 2, and 7 were brought down by controlled demolition. And of course, the ramifications of that are it couldn't possibly have been Al-Qaeda that snuck into the buildings and wired them up to implode on themselves. No, there would have had to have been some involvement of likely United States intelligence agencies, Air Force. I don't know exactly. There's a great documentary series by James Corbett called 9/11 Suspects, where he really breaks down some of the people that actually may have been involved. We're going to go over a couple of those people, like Rudy Giuliani, for example. But let's go ahead and get on with some of the videos and stuff that we've collected. Like I said, I've been on this scene since 2002. And my truther, 9/11 truther stuff might be a little rusty. I kind of went into semi-retirement. I'll always engage in an argument or debate and, of course, talk about it when 9/11 comes along. But there's a whole lot of stuff. It's like riding a bike that you just can't forget, right? They say 9/11 never forget. And I'm going to bring to you some of those smoking guns, some of the things that I think are the most compelling, the least controversial, that really make you go, what's that all about? I want to start with a question is like, why? Qui bono? Who benefits? There was an organization, I'm not sure if they're still around, but they were called Project for New American Century, and essentially it was a neoconservative think tank. And before 9/11, the neoconservatives, which is this, it's not really conservative at all, but it was a faction of the conservative Republican movement. Actually, they're Democrats and Republicans as well. It's this thinking that the United States should project military dominance and essentially be the world police. They should involve themselves in preemptive wars. They should be able to project military might on multiple fronts at one time. This wasn't always so popular in the United States of America. And it was 9/11 that really brought the neoconservatives to power. And they stayed in power through the Bush-Obama administrations as well. Trump has somewhat kicked out some of the neoconservatives, and he has shifted the foreign policy away from extreme interventionism. That's not to say that he's like a Ron Paul or a non-interventionist by any means, but it's definitely a breath of fresh air for what's going on. Yeah, give me some feedback as well. It looks like the live stream continues to cut out. This is a second take, so I don't know. We usually have a great feed here. I don't know if YouTube's targeting 9/11 videos today or whatever. It's probably something rational we could explain away, but this is the second video. So if it is buffering, then maybe try to refresh, maybe check it out on a new browser. When I went back and looked at the first couple minutes of the video that I did before, it looked fine. So after the fact, then you could check it out. I think we're doing good on Facebook nonetheless, but thank you everyone for tuning in. Try to stick with us. This is a document called Rebuilding America's Defenses. And interestingly enough, it was put out in September 2000 by this organization called Project for a New American Century. Rebuilding America's Defenses, Strategy, Forces, and Resources for a New Century. It was essentially a policy paper where this group of neoconservatives like William Kristol, Richard Perle, Paul Wolfowitz, these guys who all were in the Bush administration, they talked about how they could change foreign policy to one of preemptive strikes, where you perceive a foreign country as a threat and you go ahead and go after them. You could also, they wanted the United States to be able to fight multiple fronts, like we see with Iraq, Afghanistan, and Syria, right? But they knew that this would be a challenging policy to bring in. And here's a great little line that they put, which is really telling. Further, the process of transformation, even if it brings revolutionary change, is likely to be a long one, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. Or exactly 1 year later, the neoconservatives in the Project for a New American Century, they got that new Pearl Harbor. So I want to start by just pointing out some crazy stuff. I don't know if you remember this, if you're fresh to 9/11 or you never really looked into it, but this is just some of the big old like, whoa, they really blew it. So first of all, one of the common objections that I hear, especially with libertarians, they're like, the government's incompetent. There's no way they could possibly pull this off. Well, yes, government is incompetent, but there's one thing that government's really good at. Well, maybe two things. They're really good at killing people. They're really good at deception as well. They've managed three things. They've managed to pull a lot of fast ones on the American public. They're pulling one right now with this plandemic, scamdemic, plandemic, pandemic. So they're good at killing people, they're good at deception, and they're good at theft with their taxes and everything like that. And people are like, how could they, there would need to be so many people involved. Somebody would blow the whistle. Well, first of all, there were whistleblowers like Sybil Edmonds, for example. Second of all, there's this tactic known as compartmentalization, where only a small group of people need to know the whole full-on plan, right? Maybe not even everyone needs to know the full-on plan. Maybe there's an extremely small group of people that know the full-on plan. And then you compartmentalize information on a need-to-know basis, right? Another way to kind of combat that idea that so many people would know, there was a whole lot of drills going on. We're not going to be going into the drills, but there was like Vigilant Guardian and all sorts of drills that simulated planes being hijacked and crashed into tall buildings. And there was even audio of some air traffic controllers and folks with NORAD saying, is this a drill or is this live? There was a lot of confusion. So there's ways to obfuscate what's taking place. There's ways to compartmentalize the information that's known so that only a small amount of people actually know what's going on. But here's one of the big smoking guns that's so obvious. Okay, we all know that the mainstream media essentially is like the fourth branch of government, and it's essentially a propaganda arm around the world and in the U.S. Well, as I said before, there were two towers that collapsed, World Trade Center 1 and 2 that everyone's familiar with. There was also Building 6 and some other smaller ones, but Building 7 collapsed later on that afternoon, I think around 5 o'clock. It was like 6 hours after the first two towers collapsed. It wasn't hit by a plane. 1 and 2 are 110-story skyscrapers, really big. Building 7 was 47 stories, so it's not as big as those other two, but in any city around the country, that would be a huge building, a huge skyscraper. It collapsed later on. Now, I want to show you this video from BBC where they go ahead and report that Building 7 fell and collapsed before it actually did. And how do you know that it hadn't collapsed yet when they reported this? You can see it in the background when the reporter is speaking live. So we're going to go to this right now.
Now, more on the latest building collapse in New York. You might have heard a few moments ago I was talking about the Salomon Brothers building collapsing, and indeed it has. Apparently, that's only a few hundred yards away from where the World Trade Center towers were. And it seems that this was not a result of a new attack. It was because the building had been weakened during this morning's attacks. We'll probably find out more now about that from our correspondent, Jane Stanley. Jane, what more can you tell us about the Salomon Brothers building and its collapse?
Well, only really what you already know. Details are very, very sketchy. There's almost a sense downtown in New York behind me, down by the World Trade Centers, of just an area completely closed off as the rescue workers try to do their job. But this isn't the first building that has suffered as a result. We know that part of the Marriott Hotel next to the World Trade Center also collapsed as a result of this huge amount of falling debris from 110 floors of the two twin towers of the World Trade Center.
Okay. For those of you that aren't familiar with Building 7 and what it looks like, that is it right there behind her head. I don't know if you can see my mouse. Yeah, you can see my mouse. This building right here is World Trade Center Building 7, also known as the Salomon Brothers Building. That's it right there. And as you can see, this woman is reporting that it collapsed. And whenever they went to her from the guy before that introduced her, he said, "We've done report. Apparently it was not hit by a plane, but because the structure was weakened," right? It's like there. So here's the implication for this, that there was some pre-scripting going on. There was some pre-scripting that took place and that was handed out to the media outlets to report on. How else could this be the case? She's in New York City. She just told us that New York City's right there behind her. That's the building right there. That's World Trade Center Building 7. She's reporting on how it got destroyed. So let's let it play a little bit more, and then I got some more for you.
Behind me, the Trade Center appears to be still burning. We see these huge clouds of smoke and ash, and we know that behind that there's an empty piece of what was a very familiar New York skyline, a symbol of the financial prosperity of this city, but completely disappeared now, and New York is still unable to take on board what has happened to them today.
Presumably, there were very few people in the Salomon building when it collapsed. I mean, there were, I suppose, fears of possible further collapses around the area.
That's what you would hope, because this whole downtown area behind me has been...
All right. If it wasn't enough for the British Broadcasting Company or corporation to report on Building 7 before it collapsed, let's go over to the United States of America, where CNN also reported on World Trade Center Building 7 before it collapsed. Here we go.
Foreign Minister, a longtime Israeli leader in any number of governments, joining us from Jerusalem tonight, where it is a little bit after 11 o'clock, about 10 minutes after 11. Thank you, sir, for joining us. We are getting information now that one of the other buildings, Building 7 in the World Trade Center complex, is on fire and has either collapsed or is collapsing. And you, to be honest, can see these pictures a little bit more clearly than I, but building number 7, one of the buildings in this very large complex of buildings that is the Trade Center, there were the two towers, but then there are a number of support buildings around it, retail spaces, restaurants, office space, garages. The trains come in from New Jersey, bringing commuters, taking commuters back, come into the complex that is the World Trade Center. And now we are told that there's a fire there and that building may collapse as well, as you can see. We can see as we look.
Okay, so they start off, we received reports that it may have collapsed or already collapsed. It's right there. Now, here's the deal. Prior to 9/11, no skyscraper, no building in the history of buildings had ever collapsed from fire alone, even with some minor structural damage from debris coming down. That's the case for World Trade Center 1, 2, and especially 7, which was not struck by a plane. Again, there's some scripting taking place. Where did he get that report? How could anyone possibly have known that Building 7 was going to collapse when, as I said before, even the National Institute of Standards and Technology and the FEMA Federal Emergency Management Agency, who were tasked with studying the collapse of the buildings, both of these institutions, federal agencies, they both also point out, especially NIST, that no buildings had ever collapsed due to fire alone. It's an anomaly. And here we have them reporting like it's going to come down. There are also firefighters that were saying, get back. This building's going to come down. It's going to go down. I didn't have the time to find those videos, but they are out there indeed. So now, here's another thing. Let's actually take a look at World Trade Center, what it looks like when it collapses. World Trade Center Building 7. Now, I want to do a thought experiment. I want you to be objective. So I imagine a lot of the audience that's watching perhaps is already in the know. Judging by some of the comments here, most people are already on board with 9/11 truth. But if you're not on board with 9/11 truth, I want you to do a thought experiment and just try to objectively examine the videos that we're about to look at. Not having known about 9/11, not having been inculcated with propaganda that Al-Qaeda boogeymen were the ones that brought down the towers, just think objectively. If you were to look at this building in a vacuum, not on 9/11, whatever, what would it look like to you? It has the classic, or I'm not even going to say that. Let's just let you take a look at it and tell me what you think it looks like on your end. Here we go.
And I turned in time to see what looked like a skyscraper implosion. It looked like it had been done by a demolition crew. The whole thing just collapsing down on itself.
For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before, when a building was deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
It was almost as if it were a planned implosion.
And I turned in time to see what looked like a skyscraper implosion. It looked like it had been done by a demolition crew. The whole thing just collapsing down on itself.
For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before, when a building was deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
It was almost as if it were a planned implosion.
Okay, so here's the deal. Even if there is immense structural damage on the buildings, they don't collapse in on themselves symmetrically. As you can see in that video, there's a symmetrical collapse. It's also worth noting, you can see what are called squibs. See this right here? These are called squibs, which is an industry term in controlled demolitions, where the squibs are whenever the explosions take place. See these lines here? That's the symmetrical simultaneous explosion of the support columns in order for a building to be brought down like this. You even have the reporters early on, I guess before they got the memos. There's actually some genuinely good reporters. Dan Rather, I remember he was questioning Bush early on, stuff like that. I actually know his daughter. She lives here in Austin. He was saying it's reminiscent of the videos that we've all seen of controlled demolition, right? All those reporters are like, whoa, what's going on here? Looks like a controlled demolition. So just looking at the buildings themselves, we're about to get in some science. I see some of the folks in the comments are talking about this new report that came out of the University of Alaska. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about thermite being found. We're going to get into all that good stuff and more. But now this is big. This is another big one. There's this whole element of 9/11 truth about prior knowledge. People that knew things about 9/11 before it was going to take place. For example, there was some folks that were in Building 7 that got, it was like an Israeli messaging company that sent them messages saying that they need to get out of the buildings on the morning of September 11th, right? There were the dancing Israelis, as they're known, that were photographed and that were dancing and celebrating, taking pictures on September 11th. The FBI investigated them and later turned out that they had ties to the Israeli intelligence agency, Mossad, right? So it's my belief, based on a whole amount of evidence, that perhaps the Israeli intelligence was involved, perhaps MI6 in Great Britain, and perhaps the United States intelligence agencies. Although there's a lot of black ops that take place through the Air Force. So maybe the Air Force had something to do with it. Obviously, NORAD standing down and not scrambling jet fighters, even though they had trained in years before on exactly what to do and how to do that. But look, here's a big one. Mayor Rudy Giuliani was notified by someone that buildings 1 and 2 were about to come down, and he was given the word to evacuate. He says this on an interview with Peter Jennings we're about to review. That message was not passed on to the first responders who were actively involved, who were in the buildings, helping people, trying to save people's lives. Mayor Rudy Giuliani was in his emergency command center when they were given the word that the buildings were going to come down. This word was never passed along to the emergency responders, to the first responders. Many, many more lives could have been saved if Giuliani would have shared this with the public. So that's one problem. The next question is, how the hell would he have known when the buildings were going to come down? How the hell would anyone have known that the buildings were going to collapse? Do you remember that morning? People originally thought that it was a Cessna that flew into the plane. It was a pilot's mistake, right? But then stuff started to come out. Oh, two planes hit. Oh, this stuff going on in the Pentagon. What's going on? Flight 93 in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Nobody knew the towers were going to collapse, though. That couldn't possibly have been known from a plane hitting, not complete structural damage. A significant majority of the building was completely structurally intact. We're going to talk about that law of conservation and momentum as well. But check this out. Let's hear what Rudy Giuliani has to say to Peter Jennings. I'm going to go ahead and skip ahead. Let's just get you the front of this interview so we can see here.
Mayor Giuliani is with us at the moment. Mr. Mayor, can you hear me?
I can, Peter.
Mr. Mayor, I saw you several times on the street today, and it looked like you were deeply sharing the horror that all of us feel. But I'd really appreciate, aside from, on top of your sentiments about all this, give us some sense of what's going on.
What's going on now is a massive rescue effort. We have thousands of police officers and firefighters in all of Manhattan trying to rescue as many people as we possibly can. There are still a lot of people there that are injured, hurt, dazed, and we're trying to get them out, and we're mobilizing all of our fire, police, and emergency resources to do that. The governor has...
All right, check it out. I'm going to skip to the right part here.
And they're being deployed to come and relieve us early to later than 15 minutes.
Are you talking about the... Did you go immediately to the Office of Emergency Management?
No, I went down to the scene, and we set up headquarters at 75 Barclay Street, which was right there with the police commissioner, the fire commissioner, the head of emergency management. And we were operating out of there when we were told that the World Trade Center was going to collapse. And it did collapse before we could actually get out of the building. So we were trapped in the building for 10, 15 minutes and finally found an exit, and got out, walked north, and took...
All right, let me play that one more time.
Did you leave the Office of Emergency Management?
I went down to the scene, and we set up headquarters at 75 Barclay Street, which was right there with the police commissioner, the fire commissioner, the head of emergency management. And we were operating out of there when we were told that the World Trade Center was going to collapse. And it did collapse before we could actually get out of the building. So we were trapped in the building for 10, 15 minutes and finally found an exit and got out.
So I think actually he was in Building 7, which had the Office of the Emergency Management, and had their little command center bunker there. And so there we heard it from Rudy Giuliani that they were given a warning that World Trade Center was going to collapse. This warning was not passed on to anyone. I assume he kind of let that slip there. Some We Are Change activists later confronted Rudy Giuliani, I think when he was running for president or he was on some sort of tour, and they confronted him and asked him about this. He didn't give any answer. He tried to deny it, but it's crystal clear that he simply stated they were given warning that the building was going to collapse. Now, if that wasn't enough, Larry Silverstein, who owns World Trade Center Building 7 and the World Trade Center complex, who put out a record insurance policy on World Trade Center before it was to collapse, before it collapsed, before 9/11, he took out an extra insurance policy that covered terrorist attacks. This is what Larry Silverstein had to say. Larry Silverstein, owner of World Trade Center Complex.
They made that decision to pull.
Here, we'll start at the beginning. Here we go.
I remember getting a call from the fire department commander telling me that they were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire. And I said, you know, we've had such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull. And then we watched the building collapse.
All right. So there was a devastating loss of life already. And so we made the decision to pull the building, to pull the building. This is another controlled demolition term when you bring the building down. You to do a controlled demolition. It's called to pull it, pull the building. Now, they later backpedaled and said that he meant pull the firefighters out. But you could tell in the context of what he's speaking, he very clearly says, pull the building. Now, again, this isn't as damning as molten metal burning underneath buildings or the manner in which they collapse or the evidence of thermite, in my opinion, or the free fall collapse speed. But it is pretty hardcore that Larry Silverstein says we made the decision to pull the building. Again, prior knowledge that it was going to collapse. And like I said, there's other videos of firefighters saying, get back, everybody, get back. That building's going to come down. And it's like, who could have known possibly that World Trade Center Building 7 would collapse? There's no way to know, especially on that building. Okay, now I want to turn to a paper that I wrote in college. I believe this was 2003 or 2004. I was a 9/11 truther from early on, as I said, and we were doing this class where we conducted a mock Congress where we were all representatives in the United States Congress. And we all got to introduce a bill and try to get it passed through our Congress. So I introduced H.R. 911-119, the call for further examination of the collapse of the World Trade Center buildings. And it didn't pass. I gave a compelling case. I gave some compelling oratory. And even the college students in my sophomore or junior year at Texas State University did not agree to pass this legislation. It was at that moment when, as a 9/11 truther, I'm like, oh man, we're screwed. I can't even get this passed in my college class. No way something like this will ever pass Congress or an actual investigation will take place. Of course, all the investigations were hogwash. But I just want to go over some of the stuff in this paper, because I actually documented some pretty solid stuff in this paper here. So here it is, the call for further examination of the collapse of World Trade Center Building 7. Now, one of the things that I pointed out was FEMA. So FEMA created a report called the World Trade Center Building Performance Study. And it was published in May of 2002. The Federal Emergency Management Agency came up with this document with contributions from the American Society of Civil Engineers and produced this document, World Trade Center Performance Building Performance Study. Later on, the National Institute of Standards and Technology would also produce a report, Federal Building and Fire Safety Investigation of the World Trade Center Disaster, released in 2005, 4 years later. Now, there's some really damning stuff in here. So I want to point out, this is from the FEMA report. This is how they say the buildings collapsed. Some portions of floor framing directly beneath the partially collapsed areas were carrying substantial additional weight from the resulting debris, and in some cases were likely carrying greater loads than were designed to resist. As fire spread and raised the temperature of structural members, the structure was further stressed and weakened until it eventually was unable to support its immense weight. Although the specific chain events that led to the eventual collapse will probably never be identified. So even the United States government is saying the actual events that led to the collapse may never be identified. Now, this is from the National Institute of Standards and Technology. This is their explanation. So these are the official stories of how the buildings collapsed here. The impact of planes, severed and damaged support columns, dislodged fireproofing insulation, coating the steel floor trusses and steel columns, and widely dispersed jet fuel over multiple floors. And subsequently, unusually large jet fuel ignited multiple floor fires, which reached temperatures as high as 1,000 degrees Celsius, significantly weakened the floors and columns with dislodged fireproofing to the point where the floor sagged and pulled inward on the perimeter columns. This led to the inward bowing of the perimeter columns and failure of the south face of World Trade Center 1 and east face of World Trade Center 2, initiating the collapse of each towers. Now, check this out. This was huge for me. Now, this is me back in college, and I really took advantage of the library's policy where you could just print anything. And I literally printed out like the entire FEMA report, hundreds of pages, the entire NIST report, hundreds of pages, put it in a 3-ring binder. And I printed all this 9/11 truth stuff and just totally geeked out on it, right? Maybe you've seen that meme of the guy that's like with all the lines and stuff. That's the place that I was in researching all this stuff for several years, okay? This is something that was like, whoa, this is junk science. The same thing takes place with COVID, and it's why we ought to have zero faith in the United States government when it comes to science, really. This is how they conduct science. They start with a conclusion, and then they manipulate the variables in order to fit the conclusion. They don't start with a hypothesis, and then whenever their studies and their research, whenever their experiment doesn't meet the hypothesis, they don't shift the hypothesis. No, they shift the variables. Check this out. This is pretty big. And this is the National Institute of Standards and Technology. So it can demonstrate. We're going to talk a little bit later about their report on Building 7, because they didn't have anything. There wasn't anything about Building 7 in the 9/11 Commission report. The FEMA report said Building 7, we don't know what the hell happened with Building 7. I think I have it written down here. The FEMA report says something like, even our most likely hypothesis is not very probable. But this just shows you the science that the National Institute of Standards and Technology was utilizing. So they came up with what they called a global analysis, and they did all these scientific studies and models and computer simulations. Okay. The investigation team then defined three cases for each building by combining the middle, less severe, and more severe values of the influential variables. Upon a preliminary examination of the middle cases, which were like the most average cases, not the least severe or the more severe, it became clear that the towers would likely remain standing. The less severe cases were discarded after the aircraft impact results were compared to observable events. The middle cases were discarded after the structural response analysis of major subsystems were compared to observed events. The more severe case was used for the global analysis of each tower. Complete sets of simulations were then performed for cases B and D. Ready? Here's the kicker, right? So just what just took place is, again, they came up with this global analysis of computer simulation. We have what happened in reality that we can see, even though who knows what's really going on. Who knows what was real video and what wasn't that was presented to the public. But we have this empirical evidence of what took place on 9/11, the manner in which the buildings collapsed. They came up with three different sets of variables. Less severe, which is like the fires weren't so bad, the damage wasn't so bad, the jet fuel didn't spread as much, the floors didn't fall on the previous floors as bad. Then there was the middle cases, which is like, this is probably what it was like. Then there was the severe, it was hotter, it was more extreme, the plane did more damage upon initial impact, right? Whenever they did the middle one, it didn't cause the buildings to collapse. So they're like, all right, well, we better drop the lower cases, the least severe, we'll drop the middle, and we'll keep the most severe opportunity. But even when they did that, it still didn't collapse. So here's what they did in their scientific study of why the buildings collapsed. To the extent that the simulations deviated from the photographic evidence or eyewitness reports, complete collapse occurred. So even when they were using their extreme variables, to the extent that complete collapse didn't occur as it did in reality, the investigators adjusted the input, but only within the range of physical reality. Thus, for instance, the pulling forces on the perimeter columns by the sagging floors were adjusted. The primary role of the floors in the collapse of the towers was to provide inward pull forces that induced inward bowing of perimeter columns. So there you have it, folks. They came up with a simulation. They're like, we're going to simulate the variables that took place in that building that day. We're going to have three different sets of variables, less severe, average, more severe. When they don't cause a collapse, we're going to adjust the variables to make them more extreme until they do cause a collapse. That's absolutely nuts. That's the science that is being used by the federal government in order to study this crazy, crazy, crazy terrible collapse. Now, here's another big thing that really got me going. The manner in which the buildings collapsed. So here we have 110-story buildings, World Trade Center Building 1, World Trade Center Building 2. And they were huge buildings as well. Well, the planes came and hit the upper portion. Now, what the government says is that there was a progressive collapse, and the weight of the upper buildings as they collapsed, the upper floors as they collapsed on the lower floors, is what led to the collapse. Now, wouldn't you know it, even according to the U.S. government, the buildings collapsed at nearly free fall speed. Nearly free fall speed. So imagine for a second, I'm going to use these Kratom bags as a demonstration here. So check it out. Okay, so imagine this is Building 7. This isn't a product plug, by the way. Imagine this is Building 7 here. Top of the building, bottom of the building. The plane hits here, right? The top of these top floors here, maybe 20 floors or so, are completely structurally intact. These bottom floors here, the large majority of the building, are completely structurally intact. This top section of the building managed to completely fall, imploding, basically almost vaporizing, through the intact floors as it fell at nearly free fall speed. You would assume, based on how buildings have collapsed in the past, that the momentum and the energy of the fall would slow down as it started pelting and busting through the floors below. Now let's get to some science here. Oh, so how could the buildings fall at nearly free fall speed, which is absolutely nuts? Here's real quick. This is what FEMA had to say about World Trade Center Building 7. The specifics of the fires in World Trade Center 7 and how they caused the building to collapse remain unknown at this time. Although the total diesel fuel on the premises contained massive potential energy, the best hypothesis, fire, debris, damage, cause, collapse, has only a low probability of occurrence. Further research, investigation, and analysis are needed to resolve this issue. The National Institute of Standards and Technology later did do such a thing. Okay, so here's what the FEMA official story says. Construction of World Trade Center 7 resulted in the storage of more than 4 times 10 to the 11th joules of potential energy. Here, we'll skip to it. As the large mass of collapsing floors above accelerated and impacted on the floors below, it caused an immediate progressive series of floor failures, punching each in turn onto the floor below, accelerating as the sequence progressed. So that's the official account of how the buildings collapsed. And here's a visual of what that looks like right here. A progressive collapse. The top part falls below and then they start adding up and the weight brings them down. Let's do a quick video real quick of the buildings collapsing, actually. Let me see if I can get that for you here. So if you notice also, in addition to the buildings collapsing in on themselves, they are shooting, projecting massive steel beams way out blocks and blocks away. So if it was just a collapse from the plane impact, why would there be this outward projection? It's absolutely nuts. World Trade Center collapse. Let's see if I can just get a video so we can have a little bit of perspective of what it is that we're looking at here. All righty.
Surprising ease. More than 2,700 people died. How to better construct buildings and prevent loss of life has occupied engineers ever since. UNSW engineers have been working on the effects of heat on steel, high-performance concrete, and blasts in the city environment.
In the case of the World Trade Center, the collapse led to the collapse, and as a result, of course, they don't design buildings that way anymore.
Fire research found that using less rigid steel beams, supported by columns at regular...
All right, we'll let you watch those videos. I'm sure everyone knows the videos and is familiar with the videos, but let me get to this little bit of science here that I had in my little college research paper, which didn't even pass the little mock Congress. Couldn't even pass the mock Congress, let alone the real Congress. All right, here's some science here that I'd like you guys to consider. All right, this is written by a physicist named David Heller. All right, here we go. The height of the South Tower was 1,362 feet. I calculated that from that height, free fall in a vacuum, absolutely no resistance on Earth, is 9.2 seconds. According to testimony provided to the 9/11 Commission, the towers fell in 10 seconds. Other data shows it took closer to 14 seconds. So the towers fell within 0.8 to 4.8 seconds of free fall in a vacuum. Again, free fall in a vacuum, no resistance whatsoever. Just like World Trade Center 7, this speed seemed impossible if each of the 110 floors had to fail individually. As I was considering this, another problem arose. There is a principle in physics called the law of conservation of energy. There is also the law of conservation of momentum. I'll briefly explain how these principles work. Let's assume there are two identical Honda Civics on the freeway. One is sitting in neutral at a standstill, 0 miles per hour. The other one is coasting at 60 miles per hour. The second Honda slams into the back of the first one. The first Honda will then instantaneously be going much faster than it was, and the second will instantaneously be going much slower than it was. This is how the principle works in the horizontal direction, and it works the same in the vertical direction with the added constant force of gravity. Jim Hoffman, a professional scientist, published in several peer-reviewed scientific journals, took a long look at all of this. He calculated that even if the structure itself offered no resistance, that is to say, even if the 110 floors of each tower were hovering in mid-air, the pancake theory would still have taken a minimum of 15.5 seconds to reach the ground. So even if the building essentially didn't exist, if it provided no resistance at all to the collapse, just the floors hitting each other and causing each other to decelerate would have taken 15.5 seconds to reach the ground. And then I add a little commentary here. Again, it is difficult to perceive how the structurally intact floors below the impact zone only impeded the upper portion enough to slow the collapse 0.8 to 4.8 seconds slower than the free fall speed. So again, there you have it. The buildings structurally intact above the impact zone, structurally intact, the majority of the floors, 70 floors, 80 floors, huge building, completely structurally intact. How is it that the top portion of the building falls to the ground at nearly free fall speed as though there was no resistance whatsoever of the completely structurally intact buildings, completely structurally intact floors? And then you have the shooting out the sides. Now, here's another interesting phenomenon that was found that morning all over the place with photo evidence, with all sorts of eyewitness testimony. What is this? Some sort of molten metal was seen pouring out of the side of the building on multiple different instances. And not only was that molten metal seen falling out, it wasn't aluminum, it wasn't from the plane, but it was there underneath the building 1 and 2 and 7 rubble for months after. There was molten metal still red hot for weeks and months after the event. For 6 months after September 11th, the ground temperature varied between 600 degrees and 1500 degrees, sometimes higher. In the first few weeks, sometimes when a worker would pull a steel beam from the wreckage, the end of the beam would be dripping molten steel. So the implication is that office fires, even fire from the jet fuel, wouldn't be enough to create pools of molten steel and liquid metal pulling underneath the building. Here's some video evidence of what that looks like. Let's check it out.
Smoldered for months, fed by molten steel.
Molten steel. Molten steel running down the channel rails. Like you're in a foundry.
Like lava.
It looks like a volcano went off, not a bomb. There's ash knee deep. It's the craziest thing you've ever seen. And the American public needs to see it. They need to see what has been done to this country. Not a bomb. It looks like a volcano went off.
This is like watching the collapse of an active volcano.
Like lava.
In the book.
A shard of glass, anything that looked like would be used by a person, you just didn't see. It was just concrete, steel, that was it, and dust. And there were just thousands of guys on top of this giant mass of rubble with 5-gallon pails just sifting through stuff, using bucket brigades.
You don't even know where to begin. What do I try to do first? I mean,
morning in New York City, with this pile of rubble, steel, concrete, a crime scene, but 6 stories tall.
They've begun using heavy equipment to haul away the wreckage of building number 7, regardless of the fact that it's still burning. At the canteen, we hear some.
What we saw was a core at some point, and it looked like an oven. You know, it was just roaring inside. It was just a bright, bright reddish orange.
A river of steel on fire for months. Again, the implication is that the plane hit the building. It had jet fuel in it, right? Very combustible. And that burnt and started burning. But the jet fuel was never hot enough to melt the steel. Even the government says that it weakened the beams. And that's what resulted in the collapse. They bowed inward and then the floors fell in on one another. And that the molten metal and the office fires weaken the steel, right? So if you take that as fact from the government, what accounts for all of this molten metal and steel, right? What's up with that? Well, thanks to the work of now discredited by the media, Dr. Stephen Jones, this brings up, I'm watching Stranger Things with my girlfriend. Great, great series. We're on season three. I think in season two, they visit this conspiracy theorist guy. Two of the characters, they want to expose this big operation that's taking place. The U.S. government's involved. They opened up this portal. There's cover-ups, all sorts of stuff. And the girl's like, we got them on tape. I got someone on tape talking about their treachery and deception. And he's talking to this conspiracy theorist, researcher, journalist guy. And she's like, all we have to do is expose this and send it to the media. And she's like, ah, ah. And the conspiracy guy's like, you're so naive. Even if you have hardcore damning evidence, the government, the media, they can easily discredit the purveyor of that evidence. And that's exactly what we see took place after 9/11. It's exactly what we see taking place with folks like Andrew Kaufman and people that are doing research and alternative views when it comes to COVID-19, right? The American public is so dumbed down and so gullible. Someone can produce some really solid evidence and some really good facts and some really good scientific study and research. And all it takes is the mainstream media to point at it and say conspiracy theory, kook, right? This kookification of things, right? And that's exactly what they did with this guy, Dr. Stephen Jones of Brigham Young University. I think they even pulled his professorhood, but nonetheless, the work still rings true. Let me find it real quick. Oh, where did it go? Here we go. Okay, so what could create all that molten metal and all of that crazy, crazy pools of liquid hot magma? What could it be? None other than thermitic material. Thermitic material. This was a hardcore research paper in the 9/11 Truth Movement, the Open Chemical Physics Journal. There was multiple of these. I don't think this was the first one that Stephen Jones put out. Active thermitic material discovered in dust from the 9/11 World Trade Center catastrophe. Thermite, or thermate, which is an even higher, more hardcore military grade combustible explosive, was found all over the rubble. These guys went and found some. They did a chain of custody analysis. They found there were people, witnesses that had it. It was like flew into their condo across the street kind of stuff. This is what it looks like right here. This was unactivated, unexploded thermite all over the rubble. This kind of stuff isn't just found in nature, sitting around military grade thermite and thermate, thermitic material. They did all sorts of scientific analysis. They even go through and try to debunk their own theory that it's thermite and say, well, what if it's this? What if it's paint? What if it's that? Here's more different analysis that they do, ethyl analysis. That's what it looks like right there. And then we're coming up on the section where they're like, well, what if it's this? What if it could be that? Differential scanning, all sorts of scientific stuff, way above my pay grade, but I can just skip down to the conclusion and see what's going on here. They did flame ignition tests and actually exploded it. And it caught up as it would. How much of the energetic material survived? So there's all sorts of scientific papers. So there's people that say, well, I looked at, like I was talking to this guy today. He's like, well, I looked at the research back in the day and some engineers said that the buildings collapsed just as they should. So I didn't give it a second look. But it's like, okay, you got your engineers and studies here. I got my engineers and studies here. It's the same thing with COVID-19. It's like, well, this study said that it can be spread asymptomatically. It's like, well, this study says it can't. It's like, man, what are we going to do here? But when you think about it objectively, oftentimes there's one body of evidence that seems to hold more weight. You can also look at qui bono, who benefits, and a lot like National Geographic, for example, Popular Mechanics, the mainstream media, all this stuff's backed up by General Electric and it's owned by these massive media conglomerates, which oftentimes have ties or are directly owned by military defense contractors. And of course, they want to put down 9/11 theories that would take away fear from people, fear of the Al-Qaeda boogeyman, because it would cut into their profits. Just the same thing as we see with 9/11, we see with COVID-19. Of course, the mainstream media and Anderson Cooper is going to make you out to be a kook if you question things. Of course, they're going to censor the doctors that are questioning things, that are saying this isn't working, that's not working, because they aim to make a whole lot of money when they roll out the vaccine. They aim to make a whole lot of money when people get sick from the vaccine. They aim to make a whole lot of money keeping you dumbed down and afraid. So it's no wonder they're going to try to discredit that, right? But at the same time, there's 9/11 architects for engineers, 9/11 architects and engineers for 9/11 truth that are scientific, don't have anything to benefit. In fact, they have very much to lose by coming out for 9/11 truth, as we see Dr. Stephen Jones definitely lost a whole lot. So the paper goes on to try to debunk itself, and they can't. I'm just going to get to the conclusion. We have discovered distinctive red-gray chips in significant numbers in the dust with World Trade Center destruction. We've applied SEM, XEDS, and other methods, characterized the red material as most interesting as the following characteristic. Based on these observations, we conclude that the red layer, red-gray chips we've discovered in World Trade Center dust is active, unreacted, thermitic material incorporating nanotechnology and is highly energetic, pyrotechnic, or explosive material. Hardcore stuff, not the kind of thing that you buy from the Ace Hardware store down the road. Some hardcore Department of Defense deep stuff here that was found all over the place. So when it's like, well, what the heck is that molten metal there? We just heard all these firefighters and scientists saying that there's molten metal just spilling around for months afterwards. What is that all about? Oh, it's probably because of the thermite, right? Now, there's a whole body of evidence of people talking about multiple explosions. There's this guy named Barry Jennings. Here we have him. Barry Jennings was in World Trade Center Building 7 in the Office of Emergency Management. He was called in that day because all hell was breaking loose. And he heard multiple explosions all blowing up around him.
The landing that we were standing on gave way. There was an explosion and the landing gave way. And I was left there hanging. I had to climb back up. And now I had to walk back up to the eighth floor. When I made it to the sixth floor, there was an explosion.
He later talks about walking over bodies. The firefighters told him to not look down. He was walking over bodies and all sorts of crazy stuff. Here's some firefighters. Morning of.
I don't want to worry. 9595.
What was it like?
Horrible.
Like hell. You don't want to know.
The whole building just collapsed on us inside the lobby.
Was that a secondary explosion?
Yes, it was. Definitely secondary explosion. But we was inside waiting to go upstairs. And on our way upstairs, the whole fucking thing blew. And we just collapsed on everybody inside the lobby.
Similar to the first tower coming down, secondary?
I don't know about the first one, but I know the second one. It was terrible. Then there was a third one, too, after that one. That's right. Everybody was inside the building waiting to go upstairs, and they just let loose. Everything just let loose inside the building.
So what you tell me is that there was a plane or whatever hit the building and then a secondary explosion.
It was like three explosions after that. We came in after the
secondary explosions, multiple explosions. Now, of course, there could be, you know, reserve fuel for backup generator exploding or whatever. But the whole body of evidence, again, shows multiple different people saying there were multiple explosions taking place. You couple that with a thermitic material. You couple that with the steel. You couple that with the nearly free fall speed collapse. You couple that with Rudy Giuliani saying he had prior knowledge and then told the buildings were going to collapse. You couple that with Larry Silverstein saying that we were going to pull it. We, with such a devastating loss of life, we decided to pull it. So we pulled the building and watched it come down. You couple that with the put options put on American Airlines and United Airlines flight. Put option is a bet that the stock is going to go down in the future. Couple that with all of the whole wide array of exercises that were taking place on the morning of 9/11 and leading up to 9/11 that created obfuscation and confusion amongst the first responders and the NORAD and all that stuff. Couple that with the Pentagon. What the hell happened there? There's no plane. If a plane crashed into the Pentagon, where the hell was the debris? Oh, here's a little tiny piece of a fuselage or like tiny piece of a jet engine. No. Whole lot of crazy stuff took place on that day. We have a little bit more to report. Then we're going to talk about some implications and some speculation on what's going on. I also want to point out that Barry Jennings died under mysterious circumstances shortly thereafter. You know, another thing, I had the privilege of touring the Oklahoma City bombing site with another false flag terror attack with some of the guys from Radio Free Oklahoma. They put out the documentary Noble Law. And I was able to meet and speak with a survivor from the Oklahoma City bombing. They had to meet us there while we toured the area and talked about where the Ryder truck came in and all sorts of stuff. Really, really cool. And this guy, I think his name was BZ Lawson or VZ Lawson, something like that. He told us that he was in the Oklahoma City bombing in the building. There was an explosion that took place in front of the building, presumably the Ryder truck. Then there was another explosion that took place behind him, blowing out the floor behind him. He looked back behind his chair and there was a giant gaping hole, right? So again, multiple bombs, multiple explosions. Check it out. The Oklahoma City bombing that took place, I think it was 1994, or maybe it was 93. After that took place, Bill Clinton was president. They rolled out this terrorism omnibus bill that dramatically expanded police state and surveillance state powers in the United States of America, instituting the Joint Terrorism Task Force, which merged local law enforcement with the FBI. So now there's JTTF outposts in all the cities. What happened after 9/11? We got the Department of Homeland Security. We got the Fusion Center apparatus. Early on, someone in the comments asked me to talk about the blue leaks. Well, the Austin Regional Intelligence Center, which is a Fusion Center, Fusion Centers all across the country. They're merging local, state, federal law enforcement, the local police, the school police, university police, Department of Public Safety at the state level, the DHS agents, the FBI. They're all being merged, right? You know, another thing a lot of people aren't aware of, 1993, there was an attempt to blow up World Trade Center buildings, maybe bring the buildings down. And that was an FBI plot, admitted, audio tapes, recording. They got some dupe to carry a bomb in and park it in a van, not knowing that it was a real live bomb, and it ended up being a live bomb. There's even news reports, mainstream media news reports, saying that that happened and that it was the FBI that cooked the bomb. This is all stuff that happens all around you in plain sight. And then everyone just willy-nilly wants to believe the government when it comes to all sorts of stuff, when it comes to COVID, everything. It's a big, giant fraud. A giant fraud has been perpetrated on the American public over and over and over again. And frankly, I can't believe people are still gobbling it up. All right, so here, this, we're going to wrap up here pretty soon. We're here at an hour. I try to keep my videos and my podcast less than an hour. This just came out of the University of Alaska, a structural reevaluation of the collapse of World Trade Center 7. Final report. Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering, College of Engineering, Mines Institute, North Engineering, University of Alaska, Fairbanks. My good friend Schaefer Cox that's in prison. He was set up by the FBI in Fairbanks of all places. Prepared for architects and engineers for 9/11 truth. So this goes through and it examines the National Institute of Standards and Technology's findings, which we already poked so many holes in because they simply changed the variables when their scientific model didn't have the right conclusion that they wanted to do. This is a scientific paper, 125 pages, examining World Trade Center Building 7. You can see how close it was to 1 and 2. Here's 1. Here's 2. There's 7 across the street. Wasn't hit by a plane, collapsed like 6 hours later. Talk about the collapse, talk about what was found, the building, the structural nature. And I'm just going to skip down to the conclusion. They do their own scientific analysis. They don't change the variables so it fits their conclusion, their predetermined conclusion, which is junk science, government junk science. Again, I don't know how anybody takes government seriously these days. I guess they're afraid. They don't want to think for themselves. All right, here's the conclusions. In summary, several findings were made from the analysis above. It is our conclusion that the collapse of World Trade Center 7 was a global failure involving the near simultaneous failure of all columns in the building and not a progressive collapse involving the sequential failure of columns throughout the building. Despite simulating a number of hypothetical scenarios, we were unable to identify any progressive sequence of failures that could have taken place on September 11, 2001 and caused a total collapse of the building, let alone the observed straight down collapse with approximately 2.5 seconds of free fall speed and minimal differential movement of the exterior. That just says it all. As we spoke about earlier, let's just go back to the net. So that's what they did. They did models and analysis and ran through supercomputers with complex algorithms. And when their simulations couldn't produce a progressive collapse, they came to the conclusion that, maybe something else happened here. Maybe there's a simultaneous failure of everything at the same time, simultaneously. And they noticed that it didn't collapse with stuff pushing out to the exterior. It collapsed in on itself. Let's go back to the National Institute of Standards and Technology. They did the same type of analysis, but whenever their analysis, even the worst possible scenarios, whenever it didn't line up, they changed the variables. They changed the variables. Shame on them. To the extent that the simulations deviated from the photographic evidence or eyewitness reports, complete collapse, the investigators adjusted the input, but only within the range of physical reality. Massive fraud, huge 9/11. Problem, reaction, solution, the Hegelian dialectic. It's a common tactic that's been utilized by governments throughout the history of civilization, and it's being utilized right now on you if you're watching the video. It's up to you to be a critical thinker with an open mind to challenge and question everything, especially if it comes out of the mouth of your government. The United States, well, it's not my government. I do not consent to be governed by the United States of America, the state of Texas, or the city of Austin. Just happened to be born in this geographic area, so I'm doing my best to navigate this unfree world and try to be as free and sovereign as I possibly can. But the point is, governments lie. The United States government lies all the time. Anything that comes out of the government's mouth or the government's parrot's mouth or the mainstream media, the fourth branch of government, should be taken with a grain of salt, and you should ask yourself, what is going on here? Why would something be told to me like this? Who benefits? And when it came to 9/11, there's a lot of people that benefited. They created fear in the minds of men and women so they could carry out the dramatic expansion of a police and surveillance state and further involve themselves militarily in the Middle East so they could push out other actors that were trying to get involved as well, so they could create their oil routes, so they could topple Saddam Hussein, who was about to abandon the petrodollar in exchange, use euros in exchange for their oil reserves. And it's a classic move. They come in, the powers that be, the manipulators, whoever, Rudy Giuliani, Philip Zelikow, whoever was behind this, Mossad, CIA, the Rockefellers, whatever. I don't know exactly who it was, but I do know that those buildings were brought down by controlled demolition. And that's enough for me. They create a problem. 9/11, terror, boogeyman. They create a problem. COVID-19. People are going to die. Your grandma's going to die. You could die, right? There's an inevitable reaction. Fear. Fear for their lives. Fear for their safety. Insecurity. I am afraid. Problem, reaction, solution. The solution is always more government, more control, more authoritarianism. So when you notice this pattern, this phenomenon, this strategy that takes place, when you're aware of it, you can see it. And you can see that it's been utilized all throughout history, especially in recent history in the United States of America. And so knowing this, sharing this 9/11 truth, the hope is that we can take away that tool and their tool belt of false flag terrorism. There haven't been giant grand terror false flag attacks such as this one. You had the underwear bomber. They had to do a little quick follow-up to get people afraid again so they could roll out the body scanners and the pat downs. But we got to be aware of it. Never forget. Got to talk about it. Same type of tactics and strategies are being carried out with COVID-19, and that's happening right now. So resistance is victory, ladies and gentlemen. What can we do about it? We can talk about it. We can share with people about it. We can share the truth. You can share this video. You can subscribe to our feeds. You can share the conscious resistance videos. But ultimately, we are going to need to opt out of the state entirely, because this is a diabolical institution with some very evil people that control it. And these very evil people not only control the institution of government, which has the coercive mechanism to control everyone through their enforcement arm and through law enforcement, but there's a diabolical evil group of people that have taken control of academia and universities and schools, taking control of the media, entertainment, and news, taking control of the military, all sorts of stuff. So the hope that I see for humanity is through new technology, through decentralization, through the creation of peer-to-peer alternatives, right? We just demonstrated that the United States government had something to do with 9/11. Those buildings were brought down by controlled demolition. Al-Qaeda couldn't have possibly wired those buildings to free fall and be blown up like that. The United States government's evil, right? Not everyone involved in government's a bad guy, but there's a lot of bad guys that are involved at the highest positions of power. So it's up to us to take the power back, to create the alternatives, to organize and network with like-minded individuals that think for themselves, that are out-of-the-box thinkers, that are critical thinkers, that want to be free, and for us to build an institution, social organizations, decentralized, uncorruptible, so we can live free, regardless if these guys are pulling false flags or all that stuff. So I don't know. I'm trying to end it out on some hope and stuff. I haven't done the 9/11 truth thing for a while, but I wanted to get back into it because today's 9/11 and I see that people still are not seeing that event for what it is. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for tuning in. I want to encourage you to follow my podcast at livefreenow.show, livefreenow.show. Check out our sponsor, Free Ounce of Kratom, freeounceofkratom.com. It's a powderized leaf of a kratom evergreen tree, helps with stress, anxiety. The red varieties help with pain. The white varieties help with focus and energy. You can go to freeounceofkratom.com. If you're watching us on the Conscious Resistance Network YouTube channel or Facebook page, you can go to bros.freeounceofkratom.com. The Conscious Resistance will get a piece of the action. All right, John Bush here. Thank you so much. Signing out. Share this video. Share it with your friends, family. Peace. Think for yourself. Question everything.